All right, this is the theme music. Let's start hitting it. Can't do the fade. This is a first timer.
There's nothing like this music when it comes to basketball.
No, it is. Period. It's everybody.
Period.
Fun fact about that. We just went a hard cut, but that is John Tesh. Yes, from Entertainment Tonight.
That's really?
John Tesh is the composer for that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so he's multi-talented. Not only is he handsome and connected to, in the world of Hollywood, but he's also a composer.
I'm sure. Is he a good-looking guy?
John Tesh? Yeah. You don't remember John Tesh from Joan Hart and John Tesh on Entertainment Tonight in like the 90s?
Not too familiar.
You're too young.
I'm younger than you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, like, yeah, a little too long it seems. Making me sound old there, but. So anyway, this is Diaz and Sack. We're in the Green Legion studios. It is a glorious rainy Sunday.
Overcast day.
Overcast. We're in Northern Liberties while everyone else is having fun down in Dallas. So what we wanted to do is, because we spend so much time on the Tuesday shows talking to our guests, you know, to have Dave Spadaro in there, get all the insight, and then to have a player, we want to spend most of the time talking about the Birds. That's exactly what we're in. So we wanted to do, we both love the Sixers too. Sack loves everyone. He's a true 4 for 4 and follows along.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, my deal is, Eagles 1, Sixers 2. And then,
Wow, you're actually placing it that way. I've always thought that you were a Sixers number one guy.
No. Well, it's more of like a passion project. Like the Eagles I recognize as number one.
Gotcha.
When the Sixers lose a game, I'm not happy. When the Eagles lose a game, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a terrible
year.
See,
I'm Philly's one. You know that. I think everybody that listens to the show knows that. And then I fluctuate between 2 and 3 between the Flyers and the Eagles. When the Flyers are going good, life is really good, because they're both really close as 2 and 3. But Sixers for me are 4, but it's, no love lost.
Right. I got you. I mean,
I love the process years, because I mean, I tell a story all the time. Me and my wife one time, we bought tickets, and I think it was like our first year dating, and I got her tickets to a game, and the tickets were like $2 a piece. And I know where to park for free down there. So, and then it was dollar pretzel night. So really, in all, I think I spent 20 or 30 bucks.
So see, doing this special Sunday show, we also listened to, we also learned that you are a, cheap date guy. You're cheap date. You're looking for a cheap date for Rachel. Huh?
Actually, my wife is a cheap date, which makes life a lot easier.
Hopefully she's not listening to this.
No, she probably isn't, because we have a teething 8-month-old right now, and then Jacob's probably begging for fruit snacks and cheese crackers, so.
Well, so we're going to just do this in an hour. It's 12:03. It's Dallas week, Dallas Sunday. Everyone's having a good time out there. Hollis is living it up with the fans, it looks like.
Hollis living it up?
Yeah.
Hard to believe.
So what we want to do, the Sixers season officially starts this Wednesday.
Big time.
Against Boston at home. I'm excited. I'm going. I split my tickets between four total people, and I haven't gotten the home opener in a few years. We do a little draft, kind of like a snake draft you do for fantasy. So we met up in Fairmount a couple weeks ago. Split them all up. I was the first overall seed. Now, the funny thing about this, I know no one cares, but every year what we do, we meet at a bar, put our names in the hat, have like, a server, waitress, bartender, pick out the names, and that's like our order.
That's cool.
But the last 2 years, we just had Abby do it, and I was 4th out of 4 every time. So this time we had the bartender do it, and I got the first pick. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit just about the Sixers, some of the, things that we're seeing. What we can expect for the rest of the year, and then we'll talk more about some league stuff, and then just wrap it up with a little predictions. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
So, did you watch any or all of the preseason games? Did you watch any of them?
I barely watched the Chinese team game, and then I followed a little bit the other night when they were playing the Wizards, which we were talking about before we actually jerked around with this for the last hour, so trying to get on, but. I followed from afar, and then I didn't really hear what Ben Simmons' comments were the other day, but I think he was asking for patience, that he was going to get there, and I think he bought a lot of goodwill with the fan base and pretty much like local sports talk radio around here. I think that's what people want to hear. They want to hear some accountability, want to hear some ownership. I don't necessarily think they want him to be Steph Curry and to throw up 10 to 12 3-pointers a game, but they want him to make an attempt and actually show that this is something that he's willing to take on this year. I mean, it's got to take a step forward.
It's true. You're right. And basically, just in case anyone didn't know that is listening here, that Ben Simmons early this week, you know, all he's been talking about all year, all summer, anytime he's been talked about, they've been asking about a shot.
Yes.
And
as they should.
Well, it's a big hole in his game. It's probably the only hole in his game. But yeah, I go through this with my buddies too. You know, you get asked the same question 20 times a day for 6 months. At some point, and you haven't played a game yet.
Right.
And you haven't started camp yet. There is no real way that you can show or do anything else except give the same answer. So he's been a little, ornery with the local press, but this week someone asked him about a shot and he basically came out saying, I'm going to paraphrase, but I know I'm not the best shooter. It's a part of my game I need to work on, which I have been doing. That said, you know, I'm an elite playmaker, an elite, passer. He believes himself to be an elite defender, rebounder, post guy, those are all true. And he said, this is a part that, you know, I know I'm not the best at, but I'm working on it. And, you know, I look to be showing gains this year.
Yes.
Which is true. Not even, we're talking Sixers here. That's really what, you know, the Philly, quote unquote, Philly fan, they want to hear that from everybody. You know, that's really what it is. My personal opinion is he can't do anything different here, guys. We don't need to ask the questions until he's in the games.
Right.
So we wait for the games, but that, you know, patience in this town is zero. I think that's probably one of the main reasons, 50-50 on Kapler. We're not going to get in Kapler, but half of it was in-game moves and all that stuff that people didn't like. But also the fact that after the fact, he wouldn't, you know, he doesn't
His
need
press
to be,
conferences were brutal.
Yeah, he didn't need to be like screaming, ranting and raving. Right. But, right. You know, people want to be like, no, it's not okay. They want to hear something like that. And then we can all move on.
Yes.
You know, so, Ben Simmons shot. Why don't we just start there?
You probably watched. I just looked it up. So they went 4-1 in preseason. Okay. So how many outside shots did he take in those games during the preseason? I know it was a big thing. Like we left the show that one Tuesday after the China game a couple weeks ago, and I'm going across the Waltman Bridge, and one of our compadres goes ahead and sends us over a text like Ben Simmons just drained a three, and it was like a big thing. I really didn't hear anything outside of that in the last four games. Give me a little bit of detail. Has he been shooting like mid-range at least, like 12 to 15 feet? Because I don't need the man to hit a three-point shot, but I need him to be able to, you know, drive the lane and be able to pull back and at least take a shot and make sure the threat is there.
What I'll say, first off, the last two games he sat. He's had like some back spasms or something like that.
Okay.
So they just haven't played him. And, you know, it's preseason. The minutes are limited. I think the key with that, 3-point shot isn't that it went in. He was just playoff open.
Yeah.
And it was the end of the quarter, so they were kind of dribbling down, and it was preseason. So, you know, hey, it's awesome that he took it. He really, you watch the clip, JoJo really had to like push him to, hey, take the shot.
Yeah.
But as far as how many jumpers he's taken, I haven't seen it. The thing is, though, he's got to take them when they're open.
But isn't this the time, though, to we saw all the videos from his trainer,
right?
Okay, and like we joked numerous times, you know, like it's okay to take those shots when you're going up against bartenders and waiters. Okay, I've got no problem with that. But I think those five games were a time where it's okay. It's okay. I mean, like a lot of times. When it comes down to it, like you see these guys, take for instance, like college basketball. Okay, you're going from a small arena, which maybe seats about 10,000 people. Okay, 10,000-15,000, give or
tops.
Time.
That's big for college.
Tops.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like Kentucky probably holds that. You know,
right.
maybe Duke, Kansas. But like when they get into a game, and like say you get to the Final Four, and you're going from 10,000 feet state arenas, and you're going to 20,000 seat arenas, and now you're in, you know, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, and there's 60,000-70,000 people there. Like, it changes your range of shooting. It's kind of like baseball. Like, you're going from, you know, having, you know, maybe like, not even like a second deck, but then when you get to the pros, it's the third deck. And it changes your level there a little bit. Like, for Simmons, it's different being in a gym and shooting a three-point shot against these Joe Schmoes that don't play professional basketball, and then getting into an arena and actually being on television for a preseason basketball game and taking those shots in front of 20,000 people.
Right.
Like, I think that was the time for him. If you're going to show anything, that's the time and the place to actually let's practice it. Let's put it out there. This is what we've been working on all summer.
I think, well, first off, a caveat, for a Green Legion Raider. We know this is a super professional organization that we got here as far as the podcast
Absolutely.
And the live shows go.
Yes.
So as far as hard data and statistics, we don't need them because, we just move straight past it. I think the deal with this, with the jump shot is this. It's hard because it's preseason. They are NBA guys or fringe NBA guys you're going to. I think what would be best for everyone's collective sanity is moving forward is he doesn't need to drive down and take a step back jumper. I mean, he's done that already. If he's wide open, he's got to take the jump shot. There's, with him and his playmaking ability and he's driving, I would rather, in the scenario you say, can he stop, pull back and take a jumper? You
yes.
want to see that?
Yes.
I would rather if he's driving and it collapses, he passes out to someone that's going to shoot better. He's not going to be a good shooter. For him to have that play, maybe when he's 28 or something like that, it'll be developed by then.
Yeah.
But for this season, if he does that and that's the play, that's a bad play. He's going to drive and they're going to collapse on him and he should be able to hit. We have Joel Embiid, Al Horford, Josh Richardson. You know, like all the, Tobias, there should be one of those guys open because they're going to collapse on him. So
yeah.
for him to step and take it back, I know this is just a hypothetical here, but if he's wide open, he's got to be able to take the shot. Jump shots, if he's shooting more than four jumpers a game, we're probably not doing so well in that game because he's a playmaker in that he distributes. He needs to be able to shoot. I'm not saying that
Correct.
He shouldn't.
Yes.
But I don't think that should ever be the play call. If there's 2 seconds left on the clock or something like that, you know, that makes sense. But the one thing I thought when watching and after he hit that shot is for the rest of the game, you really notice how great he is at the rest of the stuff, you know, of driving, getting to the basket, posting up. He needs to be willing to take open shots. But we have other players around him where if he's got the ball in his hands, the idea isn't that he's going to shoot it. The idea is that he's going to get it out to the other people. If the defense is playing 5 feet behind him or 6 feet off and they're just kind of like, you know, he's right. got to be able to be like, all right, screw this and drop it.
I've got two things for you because I heard JoJo a couple weeks ago and JoJo said that him being able to shoot, Ben, that is imperative for because everyone keeps on yelling, get your big goofy ass down low, right?
Yeah.
And you know, like stay down there. Because that's to me, I think it's a benefit having Joe be able to take 3-point shots and be able to stretch the defense and pull the center out from underneath the basket. But I think we all can agree that Joe's best game is when he's down low.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
So there's that one caveat right there. If you agree with it, if you don't, and also. I kind of look at this. I want to relate this a little bit to baseball. Okay?
No,
just
you want to relate it to baseball.
Just a smidge. Okay, I don't like the whole retinkering of a guy's shot. I think if you get to the NBA, I saw that. I think someone posted something yesterday on Facebook or on Twitter, and it was Bill Cartwright, and he had an awful shot. But the guy could still hit a shot when he needed to. I mean, like, you see his left wrist was all crooked and it was just like, you got here for a reason. Like, they tried doing that with Fultz and I mean, he's a complete bust, absolute bust. But why make a guy alter his shot when he got there? It's kind of like baseball. Like, if your swing works for you, like Rhys Hoskins, he got to the pros for a reason. And then when he got here, he tore it up his first couple months. And then last year, you know, not this past season, the season before, you know, he had a really good April and then he was terrible in May and then he finished the season. He had decent stats, but like we saw what all the numbers, all the stats, everything, launch angle, everything did to him the last 3 months of this past season. Now everyone's going, well, is Rhys Hoskins as good as we thought he was going to be? Like I kind of relate that with Ben, like with his shot, like not saying that he had much of a shot, but why are we overanalyzing. Well, his wrist is a little crooked, and his elbow needs to come out a little bit more. Like, I hate that.
I understand the point that you're saying. This is a player came up here. This is how he swings. You know, a goofy stance or anything like that, or a goofy shot. Reggie Miller, famously.
Oh, yeah, Hunter Pence.
We're talking basketball here. I know it's hard for you to get away from baseball in the middle of the World Series. Just an example as we're
talking about that.
But with Ben's shot is, I hear what you're saying, and there are players that have, like, you know, funky, it's the rotation of the ball though. When it's spinning sideways, you're not going to get that roll at all.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
I think that's where most people, which is fair. Now, whether he ever be able to completely do that, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But with that in mind, you know, we're starting off here talking about the Sixers narratives and stuff that we've been, you know, people have been praising or bitching about, you know, for last couple of years. With Ben is all of this stuff, and when I'd say, like, hey, you're going to have to be patient and wait for it, it's not going to get fixed. It's not going to get fixed this year.
No.
It might not get fixed next year. He's 22. It's going to take a long time. And then the normal reply I hear is, well, we're not going to win the finals this year if that's how he's shooting. And that might be true. But he's not going to have his shot fixed the way that, you know, you hear this a lot too. Like, you know, I coach basketball and I would never coach a kid
I always CYO love dad, sports talk radio
calls. Yeah, CYO dad. Like, yeah, you're right. You wouldn't. Now he's better that he knows more about his game than anyone else. And as they try to improve Westbrook, he still can't shoot. Giannis can't shoot right now. He can't shoot.
That's the reason why, that's how they lost to Toronto.
Right. Yeah, because you just back off and they do the Ben Simmons.
You exploit their game. Yeah.
You do Ben Simmons treatment. At this state, you know, second, third year, I don't know the exact stats, but LeBron, you know, he wasn't a good shooter. The difference with those guys, though, are they will shoot the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Where
the hang up for me with Simmons is, like, I'm never going to expect him to be a great shooter. It's just, you have to be able to take the shot.
Yes.
You have to be able to take it. With it, the last thing about Simmons, too, is with free throws, got to get better. He did get better last year. I wanted him to jump 5 percentage points. He bumped like a little less. I think he was like 56 and change, and then last year he was 60 and change. He needs to shoot. He's never going to be great. He needs to shoot in the 70s. But to go from 56 to 70 in a year, I'm not saying it's impossible. It's just probably not a realistic expectation. So let's get him to 65% this year.
The tough part with Ben that people have been frustrated with the free throws the last couple of years in particular is it takes the ball out of his hands in close games and crucial situations down the stretch. And like, you know, him being the playmaker that he is, you want him to have the ball. But they took there was a lot of times where he was frustrated at the end of the game because they pretty much took the ball out of his hands and they put him in like the off wing position.
Right.
Which kills you in two spots because that off wing position should be a shooter.
Right.
Not Ben Simmons.
That's right.
And then if you put him underneath the basket, that kills you too because
the dreaded dunker position.
You gotta bring JoJo out to the 3-point line and that's where we're all like, oh my God, that's easy high percentage shots for Joe are right down there. Like, don't get me wrong, he's gonna hit probably about 30-35% from the 3-point line, but you want Joe down there either getting fouled because he is a really good free throw shooter for a big guy especially.
Yeah.
So you want him down low, but also you're taking away the playmaking ability of your point guard because no one is dynamic enough on this team and probably about, I would say about 25 other teams in the NBA.
At least.
Like Ben is with the ball in his hands. It's just, you put the ball in his hands at the end of the game and he's scared to drive to the lane because he doesn't want to get fouled. And it's like, his shot and him going to the free throw line, to me, it's like, I get you're 22 years old, but you've been in the spotlight for like 4 or 5 years. Like, you need to be able to, you know, kind of grow up a little bit and be like, oh, well, I don't want to do this in front of everybody. Like, you're a professional basketball player. I'm sorry. Like, you gotta hold the ball. It's time to grow up. Like,
you're right.
Kylie Jenner's not sitting over there anymore. Did I get the right Jenner?
Yeah. No. Kendall.
Kendall. I'm sorry. I think she's better looking anyway.
All those points are valid. They're all true. I think there's what happens when you get in the conversation about Ben Simmons or something. There is a happy medium between that's not a problem at all I say this all the time. I think Ben Simmons is the most picked apart player in town of any sport. I just think he because he's
Carson Wentz is pretty close.
I don't know, but I think everyone here pretty much is like on the Carson Wentz the Wentz wagon.
Absolutely, and you know I'm probably one of his biggest advocates. But like I hear it all the time on the radio. Like, why can't he throw the ball like Nick Foles? But we talk football on Tuesdays.
Yeah, we talk
football on Tuesdays.
So
let's wrap up Ben Simmons.
We got
20 minutes in and we can go.
We can go all night.
On to the next big topic.
With Ben Simmons, let's just do this. He is awesome at a ton of things. He's very weak in one thing, and it's a big thing.
It's a big thing. Yes.
If he's shooting 5 jumpers a game, they're probably not doing well in that game. If what we want to see is 2 or 3 when he's wide open, all right, and he's got to hit one of those, and then it'll get better and it'll get better
pull
and better.
Pull the guy
and better.
Out of the paint. Pull the guy up from the box.
Yeah.
Get him to come out to the perimeter just a little bit, because that gives Ben Simmons a little bit more advantage when he wants to drive the lane and kick it out, or he wants to just do a real nice easy dish right there to Embiid. Like, perfect. Perfect.
That leads right into the second big topic that everyone likes to talk about. But we're going to talk about the season.
It's the two big things.
Right. Now, we
lost that series last year to Toronto because of those two big things. Ben Simmons with his ability to be able to shoot, and the conditioning of our all-star, you
know, All-NBA, all-defense dude.
Yeah, absolutely, Joel Embiid. So, like I said, you've watched more preseason than me. So what have you seen as far as like a conditioning standpoint? Does it look like he's lost some LBs a little bit? Like, is he slipping a little waist?
When you talk about, he said he lost 25 pounds, he gained 5 pounds back of muscle in working out. When you, and this is another thing, you know, weighing 300 pounds or whatever, he weighed 300 right. And then he was down to like 270 or
That's
something.
That's because I'm eating that Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. So when you're that big, losing 25 pounds is good. It's not bad.
No,
but you're not going to see a big difference. He doesn't look that different.
I just don't want to see him dying in the third quarter.
Absolutely. I think this year what will be good is, well, what will be beneficial is having these extra guys.
Al Horford was huge. Huge. Because, listen, Joel Embiid's not going to be a guy that's going to play 82
right.
basketball games.
And I don't think he shouldn't.
Nor should he. With a guy that's had the leg problems, the foot problems, the back problems that he's had in the past, to me, Embiid, you get 65 regular season games out of him, perfect.
That's great. He's got to be healthy for the playoffs. With that said, the one guy that's going to help out, too, I think that'll be the people will be like, oh, I like that guy, is Kyle Quinn. Kyle Quinn
is a Pacers,
nice Pacers. I'm going to tell you a Kyle Quinn story. He was on the Knicks a couple years ago for 2 years, and I have a buddy who's a. We should say some prayers for him. He's a Giants, Mets, Knicks fan.
Oh my God!
He's from New York, you know, but it's bad watching sports.
Well, listen,
for him,
at least he's staying status quo and he's staying with his teams. My biggest thing is, like, I know we all hate, like, just real quick side topic right now, because it is Dallas sucks day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Dallas, I hate all Dallas fans.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now listen, I think we all hate Dallas fans because of the South Philadelphia Dallas fan, South Jersey Dallas fan. Okay. But I kind of give them credit in a way, because they've at least stuck with the Dallas Cowboys for the last 25 years since they last won one. So in reality, I can't really call them. They were front running at one point, but they haven't been in the last 20
years. That's true. Dallas sucks. They're terrible.
My biggest thing that I hate is the fan that hops. Like, oh man, well this team's doing good. Like, I know a couple 49ers fans that left the 49ers after the Eagles won the Super Bowl and jumped on the Eagles. Like, to me, that bothers me. We weren't good enough for you all those years, but you were still riding off of the Super Bowl back in 94, which was your last one, and they were all over 2012 when they were in the Super Bowl, and now you want to be Eagles fans. Like, to me,
that's
the biggest
fugazi.
Violation of them all.
That is. I'm a fan of other players in every sport. I like watching this guy. That guy. If my team isn't playing,
Drew Brees.
I was going to say Drew Brees.
My favorite.
Now, I've been to the Superdome 5 times. I've seen one win. I hate playing Drew Brees. I don't want to face Drew Brees in the playoffs. I don't like facing him. But I'm a fan of his just because the last, 17 years or however long he's been playing.
Right.
There. But anyway,
let's go back to this.
We can go off on side tangents all the
knowing
time.
Knowing how but we Kyle, are, absolutely.
Kyle Quinn, though, watching him for the Knicks, I mean, the Knicks suck and LOL Knicks and all that stuff, but I tell my Knicks buddy, I was like, man, you know, I'm afraid of Kylo Quinn. And he's like, what? What do you mean afraid? I'm like, no, like I'm afraid of him in a
toughness.
Yeah,
he's
like
toughness. He gives
like
you,
a Rick Mahorn, right. Charles Oakley
yeah,
kind of way.
He gives you the hard minutes.
Turns out he's like a super nice guy. Now that he's on our team and like you see interviews and he's real, he gives good
right.
quotes and
yeah.
he's like a good teammate and all that stuff. But what he'll do, he'll be like kind of what you wanted Amir Johnson to be. He's like a jumpier. Tougher.
Leave his cell phone in the locker room.
Well, yeah.
I'm sorry.
But he'll get you those, I don't know, 10 minutes a game maybe. Hardworking. Yeah, he's a little
yeah.
undersized to play the five, but.
I think ideally they don't want to put Horford in the center as much because I think you want to leave a guy to his spot. Like, you know, they want him to be the power forward. But in certain circumstances, in certain games, he's going to be the center. That's just how it's going to be, you know, especially when Embiid has to sit in the second night of a back-to-back.
And vice versa. Like, Horford is old,
right.
getting old, too.
Right.
But we want them both to be healthy. I think one of the things that my little catchphrase that people hated is when, you know, second game of a back-to-back, and, you know, oh, Embiid, second game of a back-to-back, guaranteed loss. Just chalk it up. I don't care if it's the Suns, the Cavs, you know, but now, though, having some actual capable backups. You saw the on-offs last year in the playoffs and in the second round series versus
right.
Toronto.
Yeah.
I mean, when Embiid was on the floor, they were like plus 91 in seven games. That's a crazy number.
Yeah.
That's an insane, insane
number. That's over 10 points. That's over 12 points to 15, maybe.
That's right.
Game.
We're normally, you know, a great player will give you plus 8, plus
right.
7,
right.
plus 6, plus 8, and they're like plus, right, plus 12, 13 points over. So now that they have a capable backup, or two, just to hold the fort down, they don't have to go out and extend leads. What they have to do is, and this has been the last 3 years, Embiid's on the court, he steps off, they're up by 14. When he steps back on, they're up by 5. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
just a constant.
Right.
When he's on the floor, and I think it's more of the defensive end than offense. He's just, people are afraid to go down low when he's there.
As they should.
If we can just, if he leaves the court and they're up by 14 and he can get back on the court and they're up by 10 or 9, you know, they're going to eat into that
lead. You get back into the flow of the offense and the
yeah.
defensive side.
Instead of it being up 14 and
right.
tied.
Yeah.
And then yeah, he comes on, they have to extend the lead. So.
I think a big, probably a storyline here early on in the season that isn't really getting much attention, which I think it should, is like their first month and a half. Okay. So they open up with Boston. And,
right.
And to me, I don't think Boston is, like, Boston's rivalry game. So you know, like, opening night, it's going to be tough. It's going to be physical and all that stuff. But like, leading up to practically December, just by looking at their schedule,
I have their schedule pulled up because I did my breakdown of the schedule. I did the annoying Eagles thing like in late April. I broke him down. And we're not going to go through the whole 82 game.
No, not at all. But like to me, like going up until like probably like Indiana. I mean, like you're looking at Detroit, Atlanta, Minnesota, Portland, Phoenix, Utah, Denver, Charlotte, Cleveland, Orlando, Oklahoma City, sans, you know, now Russell Westbrook. Cleveland, New York, San Antonio, Miami, Toronto, Sacramento, and then New York again. That first month and a half, like really, Brett Brown should be able to work in these guys gently, smoothly, get them into the flow of the schedule. A lot of these games are cupcakes. Like, it's unbelievable how the NBA schedule makers, like, probably once you get into the holiday season, like right around like Christmas, and you know the Bucks they're playing
Christmas
Day,
right, yeah.
But here,
yeah.
Like that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
If I didn't have two kids, I'd probably go down, but.
If I was allowed to, I would go down too. I put that game on my list of picking them out. I knew that would be a hot game with with the other, my account holder partners. And, I was just like, you know, I'm going to put that at the bottom. So, what I also do is I rank each game.
You're a married man now. Today.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to, that side of the realm.
Yeah. So I put that past. But anyway, let's look at the schedule. Because you said this. Now, you know, a lot of these are cupcakes, but what will happen, and I hope it's not like what the Flyers have been started off doing here, but.
That was a hell of a grind for the first six games. I mean, that's brutal.
I thought they would just kind of roll through the schedule, but Friday night, that game, the Sixers' last preseason game against a terrible Washington team who has terrible backup. They're just terrible.
Yeah.
the first that they were down by 26 points, you know, and, right. and they do, it's preseason. It doesn't count. They mix and match. They mixed and match the
mentally
lineups.
Checking out. You're probably, you're probably down 20 at one point, 15, 20, and you're not, it's not as like, you know,
yeah, urgent.
Like,
yeah.
Oh man, well, we got to get back in this game. Like, I don't think Brett Brown's trying to make the adjustments. You said Ben Simmons missed the game, with back spasms.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like, I really can't look at it from that angle, like with being a cupcake. It's like,
but still,
I
thought they were just going to kind of roll through with seeing that. And the problem with that, what it illustrated is, defensively, we're going to be, I'd be surprised if we're not the top defensive team in the
league. A lot of length on that
offensively,
side of court.
I mean, you know, there is no JJ anymore and we have guys that can shoot, but we don't have a shooter. We don't have
sniper.
We don't have
Bellinelli.
Shamit. We don't. Yeah, someone like that. Right. You just like, right. Okay, this guy's going to just jack up threes and hit at a higher than normal percentage.
Right.
Richardson can hit some threes. You know, Horford is like probably an average for his 3 to 4 that he'll take a game.
Yeah.
You know,
but you got to figure at some point along the line, shooters normally either get traded or they get bought out right after the trade deadline. So. You know, there's going to be, this team is going to be in it.
Oh yeah.
They're going to be top 2 seed mentality. So like someone's going to get bought out and then they're going to be like, oh, you know what? I got a good shot to go to the Sixers. So like they're going to be just fine in that area. It sucks not having that guy. You know, but they're going to survive easily. It's not going to be a glaring weakness until probably the postseason, but they'll solve that issue before they get
hopefully
there.
They do. I mean, looking at the starting of the season, there are a lot of cupcakes, like you said, but I mean, I'm looking at a 4-game West Coast road trip right in the beginning of the year at Portland, you know, with
that's
Dame,
a tough place to
that's
play.
Tough. And who on the team right now would be guarding up Dame? Would that be Richardson, I guess? You know, then at Portland, at Phoenix, at Utah, at Denver, that's 3 out of 4 of those games against, you know, Western Conference top teams there. I have them down, but this was before, as winning in Phoenix and Utah and losing to Denver and Portland.
Which isn't a bad.
No.
But, can't shy away from
but
that.
You know, the offense is going to be a little bit of a concern. The defense should hold it over, but most people, when they tune in to watch, they're watching offense, and defense is just like, okay, that other team didn't shoot. They're not really engaging as much in the defense. The offense is exciting.
Right.
And for all the people that want the old school 90s basketball, I mean, there's no hand checks and all that, but
right.
I think this team is going to be a little bit more old school as opposed to the, shooting threes every halftime down the court.
I mean, what was pretty much like the last team that kind of won at the old school? I mean, what was it, the Pistons in 04 or was it, you know, was it like the 07,
Spurs,
07 Spurs? Yeah. Like, you know, it's been a while since someone's really won it that way. I mean, I know the Celtics could probably play like a good defensive brand of basketball in like 08 when they beat the Lakers. But nowadays it's like, man, you need to be able to shoot. And you need to have shooters in order to be able to like knock off these teams. The good thing is pretty much all of them are out west. Like the west is they're going. There's going to be some good teams that miss the playoffs.
Yeah,
there's going to be some good teams.
You look down the line, like, okay, so if the Lakers are going to make it this year because they didn't make it last year, which team is dropping off?
Right.
And you know, Sacramento got a little bit better last year. If they take another 8-game leap and they're in the mix,
yes.
Who else falls off?
Yep.
Like all those teams are good teams. The Spurs, are you going to count the Spurs? The Spurs have made the playoffs for like 20 straight years.
They have the best coach in the league.
Are the Spurs not making the playoffs? Is that what we're saying?
I don't think it's, have we been able to say that in about 20 years?
But that, I don't really know who else.
I think the last time they missed the playoffs was the year that David Robinson got hurt, right?
Yeah, but when they got Duncan, it was like they unexpectedly
tanked. He could have came back, but they held him out so they could tag the rest of that season to get Tim Duncan.
Let's talk about some of the new guys that are on the squad this year.
Right,
so we've got Al Horford, our old friend Al Horford.
I think we all know about Al Horford.
We have Josh Richardson. And we got some young guys coming, you know, Kyle Quinn we talked about, so we'll skip over
him. Why don't you tell me a little bit, and the listeners, tell me a little bit, I think we all pretty much know about Al Horford. Why don't you tell me a little bit about Josh Richardson?
Well, Josh Richardson what's nice is he's got just a gorgeous contract for being a starter on a contending team. I think we owe him like $11 million this year and $11 million next year, something like that. 13 for a starter of this guy, this guy's quality. He was a second round pick. With, you know, second round picks mean nothing. He's one of those second round pick success stories out of Miami. Once, you know, once Dwayne Wade kind of was fading off last year, Josh Richardson was like their go-to guy on the Miami Heat.
Even over Dragic?
Yeah, he was their, like crunch time guy.
Okay.
He like career highs and all count stats.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't, he wasn't like an all-star player at that level, but.
Yeah.
He can do it. He's probably the best guy. He's not Jimmy Butler, right? Not Jimmy Butler. Not
which
like
actually,
that.
In essence, when we're talking about locker room chemistry, I don't mind that.
Right. This guy's supposedly
he seems
everyone
like a great guy.
Yeah. Supposedly everyone loves him, but he does have some value.
Defensive stalwart.
Awesome defensively. Will fit right back in. Right in there. That position, it's a defensive step up from.
So is it him or Ben that is going to get matched up with the other team's number one option? Knightley. Is it going to depend on the size of that guy?
I would think it'd be depending on the size. Like Lillard, someone like that. I think that they would probably go with Richardson.
Okay.
On him. You know, someone that might be a little bit bigger, or like even a Giannis or something.
Not saying that you want him to foul out, but if in all reality, you would prefer to have Richardson foul out over Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want anyone fouling
never.
Out.
Never. Normally it's the big guys, but it's one of those things to where, like, you know, you get two quick fouls on somebody when they're trying to, like, go up against a Dame in right. Portland. You know, you'd prefer to get Richardson off the floor for, like, a quarter and a half as compared to having Ben Simmons go off the court.
That's true. That's true. Now, what was weird in preseason is with Richardson, Brett Brown was giving him the initial backup minutes. Who knows how the substitution patterns work in the regular season?
Back up a point guard? Or?
Yeah, so when Simmons would leave the floor, Richardson would take over on the point. They brought in Raul Neto and Trey Burke.
Now, I always kind of like Trey Burke. I was a little surprised that he's going to be behind Neto.
Yeah.
I don't know a damn thing about Neto. Now, I guess we should move on to Raul Neto. I mean, is he going to get the Raul Labanez treatment, or are we going to be going Raul?
That's possible. I don't know.
Is he a dynamic point guard?
He's not a dynamic point guard. He's a backup guy.
So there's nothing really like exciting about him. That's the one thing last year. Like, I liked how Brett Brown kind of mixed and matched with bringing his bench in. You know, like he would leave Embiid out there for 5 minutes, and then like when Simmons would come off the floor, he'd put Embiid back in. So it wasn't just like your five bench players out there like all at once. But I think what we missed a little bit last year was that little bit of excitement coming off the bench. Like somebody is dynamic that can come off, hit a few shots. You know, like you said,
you're talking about Lou Williams, of course, who is the greatest backup scorer of all time.
The sad part with Sweet Lou is the fact that like we drafted him out of high school, and you really didn't get to see him progress and grow into the role that we wanted him to have here.
Right.
And people got fed up and sick and tired, just like they do with pretty much everybody here. And you know, unless you're Gabe Kapler, which we got that right. but like I was kind of hoping that. Bringing in a guy like a Neto or a Trey Burke would bring in a little bit of excitement, a little bit of edge coming off the bench. Like Boston, when they used to bring who was the backup? What was it? Scary Terry, right?
Yeah, Terry Rozier. He's in Charlotte now.
You could bring when they took Kyrie off the floor, you put in a Scary Terry, and it brought excitement. It brought juice to the building. Like it was a little bit of an edge.
Well, I got that guy for you this year. I mean, last year it was okay. Shamet. You know, Shamet was.
Don't
the guy.
Tell me Mike Scott.
No, it is not Mike Scott. Now this is, you're talking offense, but we're gonna just roll in right to our first round pick of last year, Matisse Thybulle. This dude, he's already, I guarantee you, besides JoJo, the greatest basketball player and our basketball savior, of all time. He is already everyone's fan favorite. And I'm not saying that because that's what everyone's been saying.
Right.
I'm saying the people that will watch will be like, who's this guy? He comes in and I'm telling you I've seen him play live once so far and, you know, the games. He comes in and you know how TJ was that little bug annoyance, like, you know, hustle dude that was up in the guards' faces and
right,
everything like
right.
that?
Yes.
It's a different style. Matisse Thybulle is just noticeable on defense right from the get-go. He's not that great of an on-ball guy, so he's not like a Bruce Bowen who's going to lock down the guy.
Now, I know he's a back-to-back Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year guy.
Right, and
the
knock was...
He actually survived. He didn't get hurt, which is very innocuous for a Sixers first-round pick.
It's true. This is true. And he's from the University of Washington. We've had a bad experience with that. Fun fact. Markel Fultz would be a senior this year. Matisse Thybulle is older than Markel Fultz.
Really?
Yeah. So a lot of this stuff happened. And this goes back to your Lou Williams point. You know, when we draft these dudes that are like 1 year in college, you're probably not going to see the player that they will become until their second contract.
And that's the sad part about college. And I've said this, just a quick sidebar. I've said this about college basketball because college basketball and the NBA were both at their peak back in the 80s and the 90s. Now, that's when guys were staying in college for 3 or 4 years, and they were actually being groomed for the NBA. So – listen, I've got nothing wrong with a guy coming out of high school. I think a lot of times you know if they're ready or not.
Yeah.
Kobe, LeBron Kevin Garnett, Tracy McGrady. Like, even McGrady, it took him a few years to kind of, but the other three, I mean, they were right in there. I say it all the time that basketball should be like baseball in the aspect of you can be drafted out of high school, but if you go to college, you should be there for at least 3 years.
Or two. Let's just even say
At least two.
I think the effort.
It's hurting both the products because these guys, they're taking unnecessary risks on guys coming out of college that have only been there a year. You really, like, you're going off of raw potential. Most of them are busts. They don't really become what they're supposed to become. Like a guy like a Marvin Williams, out of North Carolina. Like, he never became anything. Harrison Barnes.
He was drafted to second overall, I think, right? Marvin Williams?
He was top four.
Okay.
But like, it's like, these guys come out and everyone's like, oh man, well, they're going to become the next this or the next that. And then they don't. Like,
you have to wait till the second contract. It sucks. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the problem.
How about an Andrew Wiggins?
Yeah.
Andrew Wiggins.
He's got a max deal.
They gave him a max deal.
A max deal.
And then he's bitching the other day about, he's like, oh yeah, he's like, there's not 100 players better than me in the NBA. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, there are.
Yeah. He's a disappearing zero. And The Sam Hinkie process was a failure because we didn't get the first pick in the 2014 draft and get Andrew Wiggins. So sometimes just things kind of fall your way. Let it fall. But you make a good point about college and pros.
Give me a little bit more about Thybulle.
Okay, so Thybulle. He is kind of like his 3-point shot isn't there. He's the prototypical 3-and-D guy. He shot well from three in college. He really hasn't been shooting well from three at all this year so far. But watching him run around on the floor on the defensive end, I swear to God, when he's in and it's all and the Sixers are on defense, he makes a play every single time. Whether it's the much dreaded deflection that no one likes to say, but steals, blocks. It's not whether it's his guy, another guy. He's always there tapping the ball out. He's got super long arms. Imagine TJ McConnell's tenacity, but
in a bigger body,
a 6'7" dude who's quicker, can
stay
with people,
seven
can jump.
Span.
Yeah, just that's kind of what he
right.
is. His 3-point is probably like TJ's now. He really hasn't shot well from three. He's a rookie. He hasn't even played a real game yet.
Right.
Everyone's going to like him. He's going to be the spark off the bench, but not in an offensive way. So he's already everyone's favorite player.
Quick shout out to my best friend Chad, who was our sound check, and he just shot me a message saying really loving the convo.
So, yeah, that's good.
Chad's the biggest Sixers fan I know, so I'm gonna have to get him back down there for Green Legion Radio.
Yeah,
down there,
or get him on our little Sunday morning Sixers talk.
Well, I could bring him in the studio, so we'll have to sort that out. But he was there the night that Avonte Maddox was with us, so he was hanging out with Avonte Maddox's
right.
brother. So yeah,
yeah. I hope Avonte gets better.
They're saying he'll be back next week.
That's what they say. I mean, he was in a neck brace last week, though.
Was he still in the neck brace last week? I know he was at the Flyers home opener and he was chilling out with Dallas Goedert and Fletcher Cox.
That's
he was
right.
wearing it that night.
He was wearing
suite.
That night. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was what, 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago. Yeah, about a week and a half ago. Yeah.
Listen, I want him back. I can't wait for Avonte Maddox to get back, but I just want to make sure he's healthy. He's a great guy.
If we can get him, like, I know, just, you know, we're talking Sixers, but Jalen Mills is back tonight. And the funny thing is, like, I anticipated a double move somewhere in the first, like, 5 minutes, and there was like, get him off the field.
Right, right.
But then you get, like, you know, if you get Darby and him back tonight, and then you get Maddox, I think Maddox is better suited for that Sendejo role. I think he was kind of playing in that McLeod role last year. That's where he was making plays. I don't want him on the corner.
Yeah.
I want LeBlanc back in the slot, and then I want to put Jalen Mills and Darby on the outside, no matter what anybody says, and then kind of use him in that Sendejo role back there with Maddox, because he's a playmaker. Let's get him a position.
Let's get all good points, all valid.
But we're talking Sixers.
Back to the Sixers. We'll just wrap up like 10. Let's do 10 more minutes.
We got about 15 minutes.
15 minutes?
You said an hour, so okay, we got until 1 o'clock.
We'll do 15. Let's just talk about the Eastern Conference first before we talk about the league stuff.
Absolutely.
So Eastern Conference, the Sixers are co-favorites to win the East. What do you think about Brett Brown's, Brett Brown and Joel Embiid, their talk, not a guarantee like Crusher Doug, but
that was awesome.
Their goal is to have the one seed, have home court, throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. What are your thoughts on that?
I love it. I want that attitude. I want that mentality. I think if they had any other expectations, they should just pack it in and not even show up this season. I look at the Eastern Conference and I see it, you know, listen, there's always somebody that comes up and rises above. I see two teams. I see it's the Sixers and I see it's the Bucks. Outside of that, everybody else to me is playing second fiddle. So the Sixers need to come out with tenacity at the beginning of this season. And we've already reviewed over the first month and a half of the schedule and kind of what it looks like and what they're walking themselves into. The Sixers need to come out and impose their will. And, you know, Joel needs to have that mentality all season long. Ben needs to have the mentality all season long. And it breeds off of the superstars. If the rest of the roster feels that coming from JoJo and Ben, that every game, every night is important and means something, and they can get themselves to 55, 60 wins, which I think 60 wins is going to be the number
one. It was last year. Yeah.
I think that's where you're going to be at. Yeah. Bucks were 60 and 22.
Sixers over under 54.5. We're all hitting that over.
Over.
Right?
Yeah. Over. I mean, they won.
I had them at 57.
They had 51 last year.
Yeah. 52 the year before, 51. Yeah.
Yeah. And last year that was with all the issues that they had. I think if they could stay healthy, that's very important to them. And also taking care of Embiid and making sure he's not eating Chick-fil-A, you know, on the plane. I know.
He said he never ate that stuff. He told Zach Lowe on Zach Lowe's show. He, that was just like a rookie order thing. Like rookie hazing type event. He's like, oh, I got that and just gave it all away. That's what JoJo said. I'm going to give you the counter to your comments about, Brown and Joel Embiid. It's not that I don't like them. I think what that does is...
You think it's a target.
It's not even a target. It's just, for me personally, why I don't like it is because now you're going to have, you know, when I'm excited about the team, people, and something goes wrong. What I'm afraid of is this.
I know where you're going.
What happens when Joel Embiid sits the second night of a back-to-back and they lose to Cleveland, right?
Okay.
All right. And it's like, well, listen. If you guys want to get the number one seed, you got to play every game. Like it's, like you got to, if you don't get the number, you said we're getting, you want the number one. I want the number one seed.
Right.
I want home court. I think we would have beat Toronto if we had home court.
Right.
Okay.
I agree.
It's important. It's the thing. But what's more important than any of that is that this team is healthy or as healthy as a team that just went through 82 games is, at the end of the year. Last year they came out and Joel had to prove to people he could play back-to-back games.
Yeah,
Listen, who are you proving to do? You don't need to prove that to anybody.
Right.
And then what happened at the end of last year? He was sore. He was out of shape. He was beat up. He had a knee issue, back issue, thumb issue. I want Joel Embiid to be healthy, number one and foremost. Sitting him out games doesn't necessarily mean that 5 months later he'll be healthy.
I think if he plays 65 games this year, I think easily they're a top three seed.
Oh, yeah. Easily. But more important, that, you know, I don't want to say like, oh, you just want to set your expectations so low, the bar is low.
I think I know exactly where you're going with this, Diaz, because we've done it twice this year with two of our teams. The Phillies, Harper signs here, right? And you trade for Realmuto, and then they smoke the McCutcheon. Braves in the first, yeah, yes. and they smoke the Segura, Braves in the right. first week of the season, and they go ahead and they're in first place through Memorial Day, and then we're having topics of conversation, and it's like, oh, well, you know, what do the Phillies like really need to do here? You know, it's easy, it's coasting, and then the last 4 months of the season, they crap the bed. And then the Eagles, oh, they're so talented, they're deep in every position, there's no way in the world they're going 13-3, they're going back to the Super Bowl.
Right.
I think that's what is setting you back with the Sixers.
No, it's not setting me back.
I think that's kind of reining you in. Cause I know you, Diaz. I know you well enough to where you'll miss a show to go see Hamilton with your wife.
That was scheduled before. Hamilton, great show. That was scheduled before.
You told me it was business. You told me it was business.
It was scheduled beforehand. I'm not.
I've been holding that one.
Listen, if you're questioning my belief in the Sixers as a team, that's not what I'm saying.
But no, not at all.
What happens is it opens for us that like to talk about this stuff. It opens up this dialogue that is just.
Which is what we thrive on.
But I, how
Which
about
is
this?
What we thrive on.
How about this? I want us to develop, first off, find out what we're going to do on offense for the first 2-3 months of the season.
Absolutely.
Right? Find out exactly where you're strong, exactly where you're weak, and we know where we think they're going to be weak.
Right.
They're going to make those adjustments and be healthy at the playoffs. If they win 65 games and aren't healthy, I'm disappointed. If they have 65 wins or 62 wins or 61 wins or whatever, 60 wins, and they win the East and they're not healthy, I'm disappointed. But on the other hand, if they win 55 games and they have the second seed and they're 100% healthy, I'm happy with that. That's what I want.
Which is fine. Which is absolutely fine.
So as it being a goal, you know, it's a goal to win the division every year in football. It's a goal to win the division in baseball. I mean, of course it is.
Well, there's more at stake when you win the division in baseball and football. In baseball, you want to stay away from the wild card round. Okay,
of course.
So you don't want the one and done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
so
right.
Winning the division in baseball is paramount. Winning the division in football means you're going to get a home playoff game.
Right.
Okay, and you got a 50%
which
shot.
Which is why we want the home court in
right. So
the number one seed.
Which means you have a 50% shot in football of having a first round bye if you win a division. So, I get that. You know, I'm right there with you. Okay? So, let's get down to it. Okay? So we got 9 minutes left here in the show. So let's get down to it and let's talk about it. Predictions for the season. What is your thought here with this team? Is it boom or bust? Is it championship or bust? Like what is it? Like at the end of this season, what do you want? Where do you see them at? And if they don't make it to the finals, is Brett Brown out of here? I think that's a big question.
It is. It matters how the season goes and the Brett Brown question, we'll check in next June. Let's see. I expect.
But where's your cutoff? Where's your cutoff? Is Brett Brown going to be here next year if they lose again in Game 7 of the second round of the you know, if everyone's healthy and everything's right?
I would guess.
Like, what's
I would
your cutoff?
I would guess probably he wouldn't be here. My cutoff is I expect half because of the talent on the team, half 50% the talent on the team, and also 50% on the rest of the Eastern Conference, I expect to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. Whether they finish as the first seed or the third seed in the East, I expect them to win two rounds.
At least part of the final four.
Right. Now, once you're in the final, I mean, you're playing against the Bucks. Everyone's assuming the Bucks and the Sixers. If the Sixers aren't in that finals, I don't know who the other team would be. Indiana, Boston, God forbid.
Think about it last year. Everyone was expecting Sixers Celtics. Everyone was expecting Sixers
Celtics. Or Toronto Celtics.
I think last year nobody in their heart of hearts was going, man, we're going into this season. We're saying Toronto and Milwaukee.
Not that
anybody was shocked by it, but I think everybody kind of goes into a season. Like, it's too easy to kind of go, oh, you know what?
It's going to be these two teams.
It's going to be, like, the Saints and the Rams. Like, everyone's like, oh, man, dude, well, that was a great NFC Championship game. Yeah. They're going to get back there again this year. Like, you don't know how hard it is to get back to that
point. Right.
That's why
I'm thinking, get to the conference finals, see what happens. I'm not, you know, our friend Rob V, who helped us get set up here today.
Thank you, Rob.
If they don't get to the finals, it's a wasted season. That's his.
For the Sixers.
That's what I want to see. If they don't do that, it's a wasted season or a wasted year, a failure of a year.
Okay.
I'm a little more reasonable where the other teams are really good too.
Yes.
The Sixers are a good team.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to just say you got to win two rounds with this. If they don't win two rounds, with what they've got, you know, with all the caveats of health and everything like that. I don't think Brett Brown will be back, just because sometimes that's, you know, you got to bring in some. He's been here for a while. It might be time to move on. We'll see about
maybe
that.
That's the peak that they you know, like
that the peak that he could get up to.
Absolutely,
like right. You know, from Larry Boa, and then you know, Larry Boa did what he did. He got a little bit more fire in the Phillies,
right.
You know, 20 years ago, got him to be a more excite, you know, but he had a level.
He had a ceiling to where he got to, and then someone else needed to come in and kind of, because you were going from a hard nosed guy like Boa and the Charlie Manuel, and you need someone that's going to massage it a little bit,
yeah, right.
to get them over the hump.
Now, who knows how much the manager or coach had to do in that? You know,
we've had this conversation so many times.
Brett Brown has said this. Most coaches,
Kapler,
say this.
Brett Brown. I mean, we've had this over the last year. We've had this conversation
in the NBA. It really is managing personalities more so than it is, you know, X's and O's, and Brett Brown has made mistakes before. He's not the best. We have to see how he does in the playoffs. He outcoached Kenny Atkinson in round one. He had better talent, but he outcoached him round two. You know, you lose in the last second. As far as Brett Brown goes, I hope we can just table that and see how it plays out.
Listen, I love Brett Brown, and I've been an advocate for Brett Brown this whole entire time during his tenure. Because everybody wanted to kind of get rid of him, like, oh, well, what's he gonna do? And I've always been of the notion the guy pretty much sacrificed his life and his career, for the worse for 4 years. And this guy could have a winning record every year for like the next, like, 10 years, and he still probably wouldn't have a winning record overall for all that he was put through. But I'm right there with you. They need to get into the Eastern Conference Finals. They need to put up a 6 or 7 game series. I think this team, I'm not looking at things like what was it? Aaron Judge last night, him saying that, this season was a failure. I don't look at it like that. If you can get into a Final Four in any sport, I think it's very disappointing for a fan to get into a Final Four and not actually get to the ultimate prize.
Yeah.
I think it sucks. Like, you know, how many times the Flyers have lost in the conference finals, or like the Phillies losing the NLCS in 2010 after going to back-to-back World Series. I think getting to a Final Four and not being able to get the t-shirt and the hat to be a league champion or conference champion, it's exciting.
This brings up a great point. Never buy the playoff gear until you win a championship.
I've always been the opposite, and it's worked. I don't want to say it's worked a lot. It's only worked twice, but like I love the gear.
Get it out. It will be. Listen,
I know it'll be 50% off after the season, whether they win or they lose.
You'll be able to get it.
I get it, but
just wait.
But for that week and a half that they're there and they're playing in the, you know, in the championship. I love it. Like, I always have a tradition, and it's not much of a tradition because the teams over the last decade have been rough. Did you know, real quick, did you know, I saw a stat today. This will be the first decade since the 1910s that the Yankees haven't been to a World Series.
Wow. That's a great stat.
First time.
Wow.
They've been to 4 American League Championship Series since they beat us in the World Series in 2009, and they've lost every single time.
Wow.
Haven't even competed for a World Series.
That's a great stat.
Since 1910s, which was before they got Babe Ruth.
Right.
That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, that's a good stat. So, all right, let's wrap it up here with some final thoughts. It is 12:57. We got red zone action coming up in 3 minutes, so we got to get to that in the baseball. So, or the football. So,
I don't think baseball's still
going. Last thoughts about the Sixers here. What do you want to see? Let's just say this. What do you want to see for the offense, the defense, overall? How is this team going to play out? How's it going to play out?
I think they're going to be top 5 defensively. Offensively, I think it's going to be a little bit of a struggle to kind of get some continuity and to get some fluidity in what they're looking to do.
So we got to be a little patient on the offense.
I think you need to be a little bit patient. But this team, they have the length, they have the size, they're going to be exciting. I think from a tough Philadelphia standpoint, they're going to be, you know, an exciting team.
Defense is going to like,
right.
Get people down.
Cause just like with the Eagles, everyone lives off of defense. Oh man, well, you know, Buddy Ryan back in the day and Jim Johnson. I think that's what people are going to, it's going to be hard, you know, punch you in the mouth type defense. They're not going to win many games, 125 to 90. You know, I think they'll hold a lot of teams to 90, 95, but I think, you know, in reality, you're probably going to be looking at like 102 to 95 type games. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch. They're going to be a lot of fun to follow. They're going to win close to 60 games. It's going to be a good year for Sixers fans. I think a lot of people have every right to be excited.
Let me ask you this. How many All-Stars does this team have?
Two.
Two? Who?
JoJo and Ben.
No Tobias, no Al Horford, no Richardson. You don't think a third one gets on there?
No.
It's in a weakened Eastern Conference.
I get that, but I think there's enough stars on the other teams to be able to supplant those guys from making it to an All-Star team. I think there's a lot of up and coming young stars in the Eastern Conference. I just don't think that their teams are really that good. Like I think Atlanta could be an exciting team this year.
Atlanta's definitely gonna be
like Trey,
who knows about
Trey Young and
yeah, and they, you know, Atlanta beat us twice last year.
Yeah,
we have Atlanta. I think the fourth game of the year
yeah.
in Atlanta.
Yeah,
it sounds terrible to be afraid of Atlanta,
right,
you know, it's a team that this team might take too lightly. I don't know.
I think teams that have speed, it's kind of like the NCAA tournament. You know, like. You have these juggernauts, but then they run into this team that has like two speedy guards that can handle the ball, and then that's when things get upset. I think sometimes you're going to run into that issue with this team. You're going to have a team like Atlanta with a guy like Trae Young, who's exciting and dynamic and electric, that can make things happen when the ball's in his hands, and that's going to cause them problems. This team, for the most part, they're going to beat most teams. Like I said, they're going to win close to 60 games, anywhere between 55 and 60. But they're going to have their downfalls during the course of the season. People just need to be patient.
Right. You win 60 games somehow. I say this, you saw this all throughout last year.
Yeah.
Somehow, if the Sixers win 60 games, they did that, despite Brett Brown losing 22. You know, so like that's the way it goes. You know,
right.
The team wins, the coach loses the game. All right. Let's wrap it up. We got some football action now. It's Dallas Sucks Day. Love talking Sixers. We should do it. I say we should do it. If we can get in some Sixers, even maybe some Flyers talk.
I told you we should have a winter sports talk podcast.
Every 2 weeks or so we'll find some time. We'll have a discussion on these teams. The Flyers not doing so hot lately.
Listen, when you go from Switzerland to Prague to home, back to Western Canada, Vancouver, and you go Calgary to Edmonton, and then back home to play the Stars, that is a tough way to start the season. Plus, they don't get longer than a 2-game homestand here. They're going to play another home game against the Vegas Golden Knights on Monday, and then they're back on the road. That's tough, man.
That sounds like a lot of excuses. So let's wrap it up right there. Wrap it up there. The Chris Stack moved from our Phillies apologist right into Flyers apologist.
Oh, jeez.
This is Diaz. We're with Green Legion Radio. We're going to wrap it up on this Sunday, and we'll see you guys Tuesday night at Chickies and Pete's.
Chickies and Pete's. We have Boston Scott.
Boston Scott.
Is our guest in the program this week.
I'm hoping we see a Boston Green Legion radio bump with Boston Scott tonight, get a return TD.
Absolutely, yes.
That'd be solid.
It'd be great.
All right, we're going to hit this John Tesher again, and we'll see you guys on Tuesday.
Peace. TTP.
TTP.